Hello, and welcome to the Untitled Female Driven Podcast. We are three film and television writers who are here to talk about how to make it as professional writers in the entertainment industry. This podcast covers what we wish we'd known when we were getting started, and you can learn the easy way what we learned the hard way. I'm Jess Cho. I mostly write for television.
I'm Hannah Rosner. I also mostly write for television. We were like, who's going?
I'm Erica Schreiber. I enjoy awkward pauses. And also I write features. And today, we're honestly just going to do kind of like an end of year wrap up. What was 2022 like for us? What are we nervous about and hopeful for 2023? Just what's going on? I think we did this last year and people seemed to really like it. I know we had a fun time doing it. And let's be honest, we're a couple drinks in now. So
yeah,
shit's about to get real. Yeah. So this year, the really great thing that happened is that I wrote a feature on spec. And then I, I had producers and a director, Maggie Levin, friend of the show, and we got it set up at Paramount. And it was like, I've been working on this for years, and it's like maybe the project closest to my heart that I've ever done, where like it's about like these three girls, and each one is like a facet of me, right? It's just like, and they end up in this like, I just like love this project so much. I did a rewrite on it. The producers were super happy with it, and now we're just waiting to hear.
Mm-hmm. So exciting.
It's awesome.
So like this could go super great, or this could become super sad real fast. And that's been kind of like the biggest thing. I wrote a pilot and people were actually interested in it, which was amazing. And it ended up optioned by a company and producers who I like absolutely adore. Some crazy shit has happened with it in both good and bad ways. Like, it's still too early to say what will go on with that, but
that's all progress.
It's all progress, right? Like, and I spent like the first several months of the year being like, oh God, I'm never going to work again. And I think that's kind of a theme with writers in general, but like that we're all just like that, right? Like, I don't have a 100% secure job lined up for next year. I don't know about you guys.
Nope.
I just have my optimism and can-do attitude.
That'll get you very far.
And a lot of rosé.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the way that it is for writers. It's very feast or famine. And with a possible writer strike that could be coming up next year, it's definitely something that we all need to be thinking about. For any writer out there, please save your money.
Yeah, don't be buying houses right now. This is not a good time to buy a house.
Yeah, no big purchases. Save your money. Get ready for a little bit of a dry spell.
And pre-WG writers, be prepared for producers to reach out to you if there is a writer strike and try to get you to write shit. And do not do that. I know it's money and you know, like they'll promise you everything, but you won't ever be able to join the Writers Guild if you do that.
Really? Is that true? I mean, mm-hmm. if you're not in the guild, then why can't you?
Don't cross the picket line.
Serious question. I totally understand if you're like, don't scab. If you're in the guild, don't work and we're on strike. But if you're not in the guild, what does it matter?
That, you know, like basically because you could ruin the whole strike, you know, if they have pre-WGA people who are just like, yeah, I'll write that, I'm not in the guild, like it undermines everything the guild is working towards. And if it's a guild you want to be a part of, it's definitely a moment to show support. And I think they absolutely do keep track of people who, you know, like it'd be sort of like if, you know, if you have like a strike at McDonald's, you know, and someone's like, it's okay, I'll just go in and make my own McNuggets, like I know how to make them. You're crossing a picket line, right? The whole point is that you can't have McNuggets and that you're not paying for them, you know, that you're standing with the people who are striking.
Solidarity is about sticking it to the man. And if you're not sticking it to the man, you're serving the man, you're on the wrong side. So Jess, what about you? How's your year going?
My year's been going pretty well. I've been in the boys' room for the majority of it, which has been good. It's always good to have steady work, and we're coming up with some really good story. Also, a feature that I wrote and spent years writing is finally making the rounds, and there's been some initial interest, which has been really great. And taking those meetings, there's been a steep learning curve. I've been hitting Erica up with lots of questions. Basically, like, what questions should I be asking? What? I don't even know how to navigate this process. And so that part has been really fun. On the television side, a couple of projects that I have also been like trying to develop, you know, just pitches that I've been trying to work on for years. They've now gotten studio backers, which basically means that I'm now allowed to develop with them for free until we find a buyer.
Yay, free development.
Exactly. It's all if-come deals, but trying to look at the positive of it, which is like, oh, this, you've reached the next step. And maybe next year you'll be able to reach the next step after that.
That's awesome.
Chaos is a ladder.
It is. It's a pie eating contest for which the reward is more pie.
Exactly.
It's like what Lindsay Bring when she was on here and she described show running as being beaten to death with your own dream.
Oh my God.
I just so love accurate. That so much. It's so true. I think about it all the time.
Yes, it's absolutely accurate. Also, we've never played this game before, but now I have to know. If we were Game of Thrones characters, who would we be?
Arya.
God damn it, Hannah.
No contest.
You can't choose your own person, though.
Oh, you can't choose your
own. You can't choose your own, Hannah. Other people have to choose for you.
Oh.
Okay, this just got way more intriguing.
We know you want to be Arya, and that's cool because everyone wants to be Arya.
But who am I actually?
Who are you actually? Like, what's our, like, defining? I feel like, okay.
This could end poorly, though.
Yeah.
This could end with no friendships in this podcast.
Yeah, this is the last episode. Because, like, Jess, you're, like, you know, you're quiet, but you're always watching, and you're smart, and you kind of, you're unexpected. And I can't remember the name of the character, but I feel like you're that super cool spy eunuch.
I love him.
Oh, yay! Paris, yes. I could have gone the other way.
No, I love that character.
He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he's great.
I don't know. I think Jess is more Littlefinger. Which is not an insult. I mean,
no, Littlefinger is fucking awesome.
He's always one step ahead. I
he
feel
is
like
very
that's
soft-spoken, and he is very one step ahead. I could see him riding on the boys as well.
Oh, yeah. He would have a great time on the boys.
I stick with my original answer, but I see Hannah's point.
Okay. I love that I'm in the spy family, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Jess is you're the one that people don't see coming.
Right. Okay. I'll take it. I'll take it. And then Arya shivs me. Yeah. That's my death. And that's the best death anyone could ask for. Okay.
Or you get eaten / burned alive by a dragon. You know, that's also a super cool death.
Yeah. Trying to, like, basically stand up against a tyrant. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good death, too.
All right. Well, I can't take Arya away from Hannah. So let's talk about the ways that Hannah is Arya, right?
I am not Arya.
She works really fucking hard to achieve her goals. She is relentless.
She's driven by revenge.
She's driven by revenge, as most writers
are. I am
are.
Arya right now, okay?
Yeah.
This is actually very accurate.
Right?
You know,
like,
I was going to say you're more Brienne, but, you know, I get it. I get it.
I'll take that.
I mean, Brienne's pretty great, too.
She's just, like, so steadfast, you know?
She makes, like, reliable and steadfast, like, sexy, right? Like, that is a hot character.
Erica is Daenerys, like, somewhere between season 3 and 5.
Like, Jesus.
After all the Dothraki craziness and just being sold off by her family, but pre-craziness.
Thank you for choosing the least problematic, like, Khaleesi
timeline of Khaleesi. Yeah.
And I think, thank you, like...
I mean, she was my favorite character until the end. She was the best.
I mean, they did her wrong. I can't blame them.
They did her so wrong.
Did her so wrong. I love how you said between season 3 and season 5, because that's when she had all those fucking titles.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
She's like, Queen of Marine, the Khaleesi of the Great Grass.
Breaker of Chains.
Mother of Dragons, the Unburnt. It's like, oh God.
I feel like I aim to be a Tyrion, but I do not mind being a Khaleesi at all.
Tyrion's great.
Or Sansa. I mean, she had a lot of... She was also done very wrong throughout series.
Sansa after Bolton and
but
after
she's very
Joffrey.
Like, when she's, like, smart and diplomatic, hopefully, and not either original whiny baby Sansa, and then, of course, horrifyingly victimized Sansa. Man, choosing Game of Thrones characters for who you are is a little problematic, it turns out.
Yeah. They're all very problematic. It makes me long for the days of Game of Thrones because the writing was so good, but man, it was also very misogynist and there was so much rape.
Yeah.
It's, it's hard to actually pine for when that was on because it was a bit much.
You didn't necessarily realize how bad it was all along until you got to the last couple seasons. And then it's like, they just like, the last couple seasons are so bad, it made you question the earlier seasons, which is a problem because the earlier seasons are so problematic. You do not want people like really looking at them. I was trying to think of other things that were like something came out that was so bad that it ruined the rest of it.
It's like anyone who named their daughter Khaleesi like up until like 2017, you know,
they such regrets.
Know. Yeah. So many regrets.
Someone I think tweeted like, don't name your kids after characters until the show is done.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of wisdom there.
I think people had the same reaction after Lost though, right? Like after Lost ended, people were like, what the?
Hot take. I don't hate the ending of Lost. I think the problems start earlier than the finale.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that with a whole hot mess in front of them, the thing that they did that I liked is they chose to make the ending about the characters. It's a really character-focused ending. It's like, if you can't explain everything, and you can't make this, you know, like, be cathartic in any plot sense, I'll take it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we talked about Erica's year. We talked about my year. Hannah, how about your year?
I don't know. It's been a weird year because I feel like the best thing that happened in my career happened right at the beginning of the year because I got a director attached to a feature that I wrote. Got my first script option, which was really exciting. So that
That's
happened.
So
and
cool.
Then it's all been downhill from there. No, but the show I worked on got canceled and it's been a really rough staffing season. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. We're going to have to talk about how, like, fucking dire TV looks in the coming
it's
year.
Not yeah. looking good.
It's
it
not
is
great.
Bleak as hell.
Hence the strike. Yeah.
Hence the strike. Yes. And that's mm-hmm. the thing. We have to strike. I mean, that's my opinion. After three glasses of wine, we cannot not strike.
So I had lunch, you know, recently with an exec who I love and who is like so smart and so wonderful. And obviously we haven't worked together. We're friends outside of that. So, and she doesn't really do genre stuff, which makes it really great for us to have like really honest conversations about the state of things, right? And, you know, I specifically like invited her to lunch to be like, hey, I'm going out with some TV stuff and I'm trying to figure out if the landscape is as dire as every writer I know thinks it is. And she was like, well, yes, unfortunately, yes. And I was like, well, that's a bummer. She offered a little wisdom on like what's actually selling for them right now, which is very little. They're a big company. And you know, she asked about the writer's strike and she's like, because from my side of things, it looks like, you know, a little bit like Read the Room, you know, like everything's tanking. Like, what are you guys thinking? You know, that you know, like it's not really a good look for writers to strike right now. I was like, I totally hear you. But consider 3 years ago, we couldn't ask for anything. Right. So it's like asking us to take a pass a second time is not a really realistic request. Right. Because like 3 years ago, we were in the height of COVID. And the writer's guild can be like, well, we won't work at a time where everyone's like, fuck, no one can work.
Yeah, we're not working anyway.
Right?
Yeah.
That would have been a truly bad look, right? So we've got that. And secondly, I was just like, look, like all the things that you're talking about that make this seem like a bad time for writer's strike are exactly the reasons we need to, right? Like, hopefully we don't need to. Hopefully everything goes fine and dandy. But like, no, because like no one wants to strike. But like, you know, all these things you're talking about, how like, you know, there's all this consolidation and all these people are being laid off and stuff like that. Like, these things affect writers just as directly as they affect everyone else. And so, like, we're a union. We have a chance to actually maybe take a stance and hopefully, you know, like, we're not asking for all of Netflix's money. We're asking for there to be an existence of a middle class of writers.
Yes. Yeah. Also, I take issue with the Read the Room, everything's tanking. It's like, okay, but why is that?
Yeah.
Who is, like, greenlighting which projects go through? Who is making incredibly safe decisions, very bland decisions?
Every time I hear about something's being rebooted or some movie is being turned into a TV show, I'm like, ugh. But there's also times where I hear about it not getting done. You know, like I happen to know they went out with a Donnie Darko TV show with Jake Gyllenhaal attached and the original like writer-director attached, and they could not get that set up.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? That's where we're at. We're like, yeah. That doesn't happen.
A lot of things are really just not selling.
Tina Fey just went out with a show and she was like, what the fuck? Why can't I sell this anywhere? I'm Tina Fey. And it's just like, yeah, sorry.
No, they're just not willing to pay.
And I don't mind Tina Fey not being able to sell the show if they're taking a chance on some cool, young, like hopefully diverse writer. But it doesn't really seem like they're doing that either. It's hard to say. Do you guys remember when that Lord of the Rings article went around and it was like so tone deaf because they're like, wow, Amazon took a chance on these two young first-time showrunners. And I'm like, and they're white dudes.
Of course.
I mean, they took so many pitches. And this is something that'll come up for the potential writer's strike is that there, you know, a limit is being reached with writers in terms of free development and free pitches, right? Like, I'm not expecting any producer to pay to hear a pitch I have come up with. But I do think that paid pitching, even just a nominal fee, would prevent 12 people bake-offs. That turned into no job. Execs can do their job and get paid to set up, you know, 12 writers to pitch on a job and then all decide, well, we don't actually want to make this movie or TV show. And then, you know, they all got paid for that, but not the 12 writers, you know, like it's just really something to think about producers sitting in a room with a writer who has worked for months and months on a thing and didn't get paid, and they take an hour of their lives to hear it, and they get paid.
Right.
You know, and this is also something that came up at my lunch, and she was like, no, I feel that so hard. Whenever I hear a writer, I want it to work so much. And, you know, and she also describes some situations in which writers have, like, truly bombed in front of her. And that happens totally. And, like, I imagine if you paid someone to bomb in front of you, you would be like, grr. But it's still the imbalance of it that's so unfair.
Yeah. I'm just so tired of being told to be grateful for the opportunity.
I'm going to talk about this for a second. I have always sort of been told, I think, coming up in this business that, like, if you get an opportunity, even if it seems like a toxic environment or it's not the right fit for you, that you should just be grateful and take it. And I just want to say that is total fucking bullshit. And the reason why is because the damage that can be done to your confidence as a writer, the most important thing you have is your creative ability. And if you start to lose faith in yourself because you're working in an environment where you're constantly being told that you're lucky to be there and that you need to earn your place, you already earned your place. You got the job. You're in the room. You're in the pitch. Whatever that job is, you proved yourself already. And now you should be operating from a place of love and joy. Not every job is going to be fun every day. I know that that's the case. But you should at least be able to come to work every day feeling like, I'm excited, I'm bringing in ideas, I am valued for who I am and what I have already been bringing to the table and continue to bring every day. But if you're operating from a place of fear, where you're like, I need to prove myself every day and I'm under so much pressure every day to, you know, to come up with something that continues to prove that I belong here, you're already starting at a disadvantage and you're not going to be your most creative, your most, you know, collaborative, enthusiastic self. And so I'm here to say that if anyone is in a job interview and they're like, well, I don't think this is going to be a good person to work for or a good environment, but I really need this job. You don't. It's not worth it.
That's really well said. Thank you for saying that. I've been thinking lately about how this is a really hard job and how it should be a really hard job, right? Like, it should be difficult to be a really great screenwriter because writing a great screenplay is really fucking hard, right? But I've been thinking about how, like, the way this job is maybe the most difficult to me is just, like, nearly daily rejection, right? And, like, I've been at this a long time. I'm not going anywhere. But, like, it's foolish to ignore the way that that adds up, right? That someone, like, doesn't like the rewrite you did, doesn't want to hear your pitch, doesn't want to move forward with a project. It's like all the different ways in which we're rejected is just constant and impersonal and oftentimes incredibly unfair, right? And not everyone gets to make movies. There's only so much money to make movies out there. There's only so many opportunities, and execs do work really fucking hard and in trying to, like, create content that's really good and that will resonate with audiences, and they have a whole perspective that we don't. But, like, that's the thing. And I really hope, you know, listeners, because I know Hannah and Jess and I, we have this with each other. I really hope you have someone to talk you through those times, right? To be that support system, and that you are that support system for someone else, you know, like, because even a writer who is slightly or even very more successful than you is experiencing that exact same thing. Constantly being told that your writing isn't good enough, which always feels like you're not good enough.
And also, whoever's saying your writing isn't good enough, the hardest thing that it took for me to learn was to be like, oh, that's a subjective opinion. It's not an objective opinion. Everything in our business is entirely subjective.
You know, the three of us all have plenty of, you know, validation. We've read each other's stuff. We're all working, you know, like, we have reps. But it's still just take those breaks, have those drinks with your friends, like, take care of yourself, because it doesn't actually get easier. It just gets harder in a different way. And, like, obviously, like, that's not totally fair, because if you're making money and versus not making money, that makes all the difference in the world. I don't want to diminish that. But I just meant emotionally. It's always going to be as emotionally hard as it is right now.
I totally agree with that. I think it's also very easy to get cynical in this job. You're in it for too long, if you don't have a support system to draw you out of that cynicism, if you don't manage to get perspective outside of this job, that's the thing that's hardest for me, which is my focus gets so narrow. It's like I'm wearing these horse blinders.
I think that's especially true when you're in a room, though.
Absolutely. And I think this is my whole world. This is the whole world. And as soon as you start believing that, you're in trouble. And yeah, I just want to second everything you said, which is burnout is real. Sometimes you can't muscle your way through a thing. Sometimes you actively need to admit to yourself you are human and take a step back and take a break and take care of yourself.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just about trying a project that's just for you. Like, guys, I'm so excited to write a feature that's just for me, you know? Like, it's just for me until I send it to anyone else, and then it becomes like a real thing. But like, I have a couple ideas and I'm like, I'm going to try to work over the break, but I'm not going to try to work over the break if I'm too tired to work over the break, right? Like, if it gives me joy and I'm like, yes, I'm so excited to do this, like, that will energize me. But if it's like, if I'm reaching for something and I find nothing, which almost happened to me on like a, there was a, you know, a pitchy thing that I needed to do in which they needed me to go another direction. And it was only like the night before when I figured it out, right? It was like 2.5 weeks of me being like, I got nothing. I got nothing. I got nothing. And then it was just like, bam, driving home from like some random appointment. I was like, oh, I could do this, right? And the fact that it took me that long and it came at me that way made me realize I'm probably closer to burnout than I think.
Absolutely. I was talking to someone the other day who was very successful at what they do. And I was looking for advice and I was sort of like, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm, you know, writing a logline every day. I'm doing this. I'm writing. I sit down and write every day and I'm showing up to work, and that's all good. I think if you're showing up to work, even when no one's paying you to show up, is going to help you. Like, I do believe that that, you know, work ethic and that routine is going to help you. But if you really are just like where I was a couple weeks ago, where I was just feeling not inspired and like, I don't believe in any of my ideas. And I was just like, am I never going to come up with anything good again? And I was putting so much pressure on myself that this person I talked to who gave me advice was like, you can't draw from an empty well. Like, if you're burned out and you're not inspired because all you're doing is sitting in front of your computer and forcing yourself to write instead of going out and like experiencing life, then what are you going to write about? Like, how are you going to write about something? And so I kind of stepped away and took a break for a while. And I was under, I went under anesthesia the other day for an operation, and I took the whole day off afterwards to like not do work and just watch movies. And then I came up with an idea that I like became obsessed with and wrote a whole beat sheet the next day. So it's like only enforcing myself because I physically am being forced to be unconscious and then, you know, recovering from anesthesia for a whole day. Of course, that's when I come up with something really cool.
I think it always works that way too. Like, I got sick a week or two ago and I was like, oh, I have an idea. And then like, but I have to go to bed.
But your subconscious keeps working on it, I think. And it's not work, it's play. It's like you're making art and you're exploring and you're curious. Like, that's really where I think the art comes from. And then of course it's a slog every day you sit down.
For me, it's driving and the shower. Those are the places I'm most likely to just like my, like not be thinking about it and then click, like either a new idea or a way to fix a thing or whatever. Like, it's like, it really is the not focusing on it and just letting your brain run free that, yeah, you can't, what is it? Force blood from a stone or water from a stone or blood from water. I don't know.
You can't get anything from a stone except so, like, for stones, are, like, smaller stones when you break the stone.
You crush a stone, you're not getting anything except gravel. Like, let's be honest. So there have been a lot of days this year where like I was so mad at myself because I sat and read a book instead of doing the work that I intended to do for like half a day or whatever. And therapy, which we have recommended on this podcast many times, kind of helped me see like if that's what you're doing, it's because that's what you need to be doing. Maybe I'm not a lazy, you know, nonsense person. And the other day, my husband, Rodney, did this thing that was so sweet where he just like, he was like, you've written so many things. And he just started going through all the things I've written, you know, because he's read them or he's
so sweet.
He's read like 98% of them. But he just was like, there's time you did this and that. And there was something I had like literally forgotten that I'd done. It was honestly one of the, just, it was so kind and it meant the world to me because I was like, I have done that. And that means that sometimes if all I can do is sit here and read like Bringing Down the Duke for the fourth time, that's just because that's what I need to be doing right now.
I need to go back to that book.
It's so good.
Yeah, I need to go back to it.
Oh, I have such a recommendation for you guys too. I just read A Lady's Guide to Fortune Hunting. Ooh. And it is a, you know, like romance set in the Regency era, but it's not one of the, I mean, we love those trashy romance novels, but let's face it. But like, this is like very much an updated Austen kind of thing. And I was really exciting. I thought it was great.
I need a new book. I'm actually reading 5 books right now, and I'm not actively reading any of them because none of them have grabbed my attention. I keep being like, all right, I'll go back to this one, but I feel like I'm in the mood for this one. And then I read a little bit of it and I'm like, no, it's just not, it's not grabbing me.
I'm optimistic for all 3 of us for the new year. I think that things are going to get probably worse before they get better. But a producer I worked with, he was saying that like the one thing that remains constant in terms of like whether a movie gets made is whether someone high enough up really wants to make it. And that usually comes down to material. And that's the one thing we have control over.
Just keep writing or take a break and read a book for a week.
Absolutely. Justin and I are obsessed with those Deadly Education books, the Scholomance series. Hannah, you should definitely.
I have. Okay. That might be my next book.
Come join us.
After Hannah, you've read it. We should just turn this podcast into like a fan podcast for Naomi Novik.
I love it.
Anyway, I think we're out of time.
This was fun. I feel like I was really negative. I'm just like
it's
focusing
okay to
on
be
the
negative
right now.
You know, like,
but actually I've gone through a lot of personal growth this year. Like I feel like this was probably the hardest year of personally in terms of like work and just having really difficult situations in my work life, but I've gone through a lot of growth. And so I think next year is going to be fine. But I was also going to say one good thing that did happen that I'm excited about for next year is I might be creating a podcast. Might being that I did get a job to create a fictional podcast, but we'll see if it actually happens.
But that's so exciting. Narrative podcasts are this like super cool new frontier, I feel like, that it's not even, it's like, it's a callback to like radio plays and stuff like that. It's such a great way to tell a story.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Like I'm excited about the opportunity and the company that I'd be working with, but I'm also just really excited about like a new medium. I think it sounds like a really cool challenge.
Are you going to be voicing it yourself?
Or I hope so.
Yeah, because you've got a great voice for
so
podcasting.
True.
Well, thank you. Okay, well, that was our end of the year wrap up. Thank you all for listening. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @untitledfemale. You can connect with us there or email us at untitledfemaledrivenpodcast@gmail.com. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear what you like. Tell us what you'd like to hear us talk about in future episodes. All right. Bye.
Bye. Have a wonderful 2023.